Hey, David.
All right.
I know. I know you
Hey,
can
what's
finally
up?
take it off, right?
I'm in my office, yes.
Next year we got to get other people to do this, right? It's like nobody
How
wants
are
to do
you?
anything. They're all getting excused from the meetings. If you look at the membership at all the meetings that people are going to, it's like half of everybody has never shown up. They're all excused. So it's like, can't wait till we get back to real meetings.
Oh my God. We'll see what happens.
I know it
Wait.
might be another year.
Yeah, we're gonna have a meeting tomorrow, like an all hands meeting tomorrow. I think they're gonna tell us like, oh no. It ain't happening. Y'all need to stay wherever you're at, which is, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. How was San Diego anyway?
It was actually very, very nice. I did not expect it to be that nice. It was actually very nice. The one thing I did not like about it was that all the precautions we have here, they don't practice over there. So no one's being screened for like vaccines when you go somewhere. Like half of the people aren't masking. It was, and not being asked to mask. It was, I didn't like that part. But aside from that, it
Yeah.
was fine. Yeah.
Wow.
Where is everybody? Where's mine?
Don't know. It's getting close to time. Hey, Derek.
There's everybody.
It's 3 o'clock.
Wow.
Who's that?
Mine sort of reminds me what time it is. I'll turn it.
It was All right, welcome everyone. Let's wait a few more minutes.
So, David, just some feedback I just learned. My partner heard from his doctor. That he should get the fourth dose. And so he went to Kaiser and they directed him to the sites that are doing fourth doses. So I then also went to, because I'm not Kaiser, and I found that there's a nuance of terminology that's causing problems. And that is if you're a long-term survivor and you got your two doses, and then you got what's called a booster dose. That booster dose is now called an additional dose. That third
Interesting.
one is called an additional dose because you can only have one booster. And so if you go in and say, I want to get my second booster, they will tell you, no, you can't get it. But if you say, I've had my additional dose, and it's been 5 months, and you can show it's been 5 months since then you're eligible for the next dose.
Okay. Yeah,
And
I saw something yesterday, but I was a little bit confused because they were just the terminology was not there. You're absolutely correct. It was like booster and then booster two, and I'm like, well, what's the second booster? So I had, and it was just very much like we're still looking into like releasing something for that.
right.
That's what it was. Okay.
So for us letting people know, let them know that the terminology should be, I've had my first two doses, and then I had my additional dose 6 months later, and now it's 5 months since then, and I'm coming in for my booster dose. And in the city, They will tell you there's long lines and you have to make an appointment and it's 2 weeks out. There is a walk-in on Mission Street and between the 20th and 21st. It's like 24, 24, something like that. And you walk in, I just did it and it, no lines, no nothing. You walk in and you have a choice of either Moderna or Pfizer. You know, you don't have to take the same one you took before. So
yeah, a similar one down the street for me. So I think there's a few. Yeah. Why go the route of waiting if you don't want to?
Right. Well, Mark, I think you missed the first part about that. Long-term survivors are now eligible for a fourth dose.
Oh, what?
Yes.
Oh,
at five months after they had their last dose. But they have to use the terminology I had. That third dose was not a booster dose. It was an additional dose.
Tricky.
Because you're only allowed one booster. And that's what the CDC... So everybody's confused because when you call and say, I want to get my second booster, they say, no, you can't get a second booster. You already had your booster. You need to say, no, I had my additional dose. I'm now getting my booster. So for all of our long-term AIDS, HIV survivors who are in that immune compromise, and for what it's worth, my doctor makes me do antibody tests before I get any new doses to see what my level of antibody response has declined from one to the next. And from the dose I got 5 months ago till yesterday, my antibody response had dropped in half or more. So it very much supported me getting the additional fourth dose.
Oh, I see. So that impacted approval.
No.
Oh, okay.
This is not something that has been formalized yet.
Okay.
But you can get the antibody test to see where you are. But it's not something the CDC has approved the test, but it's not used as a diagnostic tool except for physicians who want to use it.
I see.
Is that right?
So David, Ken, you got it. I think you got it, Ken. It's Bill. I think you're, just to be clear, two kinds of antibody tests. One is to measure the strength of the antibody response in a person's body to a pathogen. And the second is just to see if you're testing positive for the virus. I think that's maybe where a little confusion is happening here.
Yeah, and mine was the numbered amount.
Correct. Yeah. So that's measuring the strength of your body's response if that pathogen was introduced.
Sure. And for what it's worth, 5 months ago, after I got my third dose, I was 54, whatever that means. And yesterday I was 24. So this encouraged my doctor to send me in to get a fourth dose. And he suggested I get Moderna, and I'd had Pfizer before. But when I went in, I wasn't paying careful attention, and I said Moderna, and they gave me Pfizer. So it was my own fault for not, you know, you need to really advocate for yourself and say, now, what are you giving me? But for what it's worth, I got the fourth dose.
Cool.
And I recommend that if there is some way for all of us who are long-term to send out to other long-terms, because unless you know this, people with Kaiser, they wouldn't know it necessarily. My partner only knew it because he's a long-term survivor, and his infectious disease specialist said, you need to go get your fourth dose. And then when he went to Kaiser, they said, of course, and here's the list of places you can go.
I also wonder if that might just be a Kaiser go-ahead as opposed to something that's more citywide or even Bay Area wide sort of acceptance to do.
Well,
about the approval of a fourth dose.
No, well, it's CDC recommendation. So you can go on the CDC website and it says people who are immune compromised. Initially, it said 6 months after your last dose. They changed it last week to 5 months after your last dose. So if you go on CDC, it is their recommendation. So, and as we know, Kaiser versus the city versus the CDC, they're not all in sync.
In alliance, right. Right.
Yes, we definitely know that.
So sorry, I didn't mean to hold us up.
Oh, no, no, it's fine. I think, you know, conversations later. But Bill's also on the call, so, you know, if there's anything city related, we could always ask him later. All right, so let's get started with the meeting. I think we have quorum, right, Mark? Yep. All right, let's get started really quickly with introductions. I'm going to go down the list according to what I have on my screen. So first we have Chuck.
Here.
Hey, Derek.
Here.
And?
At large member.
Irma.
Hi, here.
Kevin.
Kevin, HHS. Kevin Hutchcroft, HHS.
Thomas.
Thomas Noble, Community Health Equity and Promotion Branch, Irma co-chair.
All right, and then we have Bill.
Hi, Bill Bloom, HIV Health Services.
Great, and then we have staff. So first we have Kira.
Hi, everyone, council staff, Kira.
Dave.
David Jordan, council staff.
And Mark.
Mark Bomer, council staff.
Thank you, sir. All right, great. So I'm David, council co-chair. And moving on really quickly to review and approve the agenda for today. So this is what we got. If there are no changes or additions, I'd like to approve these by consensus, just a pretty quick meeting. All right, thank you. And then we need to approve the minutes for the November 18th hearing committee meeting, which is a few months ago. Give a minute just to sort of review really quickly, making sure everybody who was here is present and accounted for in the notes.
Updates, I mean, after the present and absent, we have updates, committee of work group reports, and the rest.
Great. So if there are no additions or changes, like to approve those like consensus as well. Okay, great. And now announcements, any announcements? I don't see anybody's hand going up. I don't think they'll be unmuting, so I'm gonna go forward. I'm assuming that things are going as usual without any changes in terms of the way that we do business. So I'm just gonna move forward with that. Cool. No public here, so no public comment. Okay, next we have CHEP and HHS updates. So let's start with CHEP. Thomas. Thomas, HHS update. CHEP update.
Sorry about that. A couple different things. So one is just the biggest thing is the mayor's announcement a couple weeks ago now, just with regards to the emergency response for the TL component. And part of that response has been coordinating CBO efforts in a linkage center that is at Civic Center Plaza. So that is launched this week on Tuesday, and a lot of CHEP staff have been interacting with that space, and a lot of people are accessing it. So it's good to see. It's in my mind, it's kind of it's a drop-in space basically. So they've cordoned off part of the Civic Center, and so people can sit outside and it's fenced. It's interesting, like they used to shoo them off when they were sitting in Civic Center, and now they just put up a fence and they're like, okay, you can spend the whole day here. But that's what's needed, right? People just need a hang space often in the streets, and then they can engage with various providers providing various services to help improve quality of life. So I think that has been the most significant thing happening at our realm in the CHEP world. We're still looking at COVID, Omicron, significantly took us in a direction where we thought we were going to be winding things down. And so obviously we are not, but we are also predicting that Omicron will hopefully come and go relatively quickly. And then the health department's struggling with the energy of like, what do we do moving forward? How do we move COVID into a space of kind of a chronic disease energies, for lack of a better word. And so leadership is currently kind of scratching their heads and trying to put together a best way to proceed forward with that. I do getting a sense of an energy that the priority is just going to be to reduce death, to be really clear. So that's going to be the priority with regards to making sure that whoever does get COVID does not lead to the loss of life. I'll stop there.
Cool, thank you. And then I'd like to welcome Richard to the meeting. Hey, Richard. All right, cool. Next, we have Kevin Hutchcroft from HHS.
Yeah, just a couple of things. First, we received word that we will get a partial award for a Ride Right Part A. It's a percentage, I think, of the formula, maybe half. And then I think a third of the Minority AIDS Initiative. Not sure about those, but in any case, we don't know enough to determine our total award. Yeah, but we did get notice that it will be a partial award again this year. Might mention to you that one HHS staff person has been activated part-time, excuse me. One person at HHS has been activated for COVID activities in the next weeks. Another staff person has been trained and activated to help with the Tenderloin Emergency Response Center. We're awaiting a list of candidates from Human Resources to replace Joseph Cheture's position. As far as ending the epidemic, we were awarded, as you remember, $1 million per year with that 5-year award. And that's through 2025 for a total of $5 million. Now in the second year, we did receive an increase of 600,000. So we are hopeful anyway that in year three, we might receive another increase, but we have that $1 million base award. Those contracts should begin March 1st. 2022. We do not have either a partial or a complete EHE award. I might also mention again that 6 months recertification issue that was ended by HRSA in a clarifying letter. This is important. We've heard for years how difficult that is on clients and certainly administratively burdensome on grantees, but we are beginning the process locally of implementing that guidance. So be happy to try to respond to any questions.
Cool, thank you, Kevin. If there are no questions, I'd like to call on Thomas Noble again to give us a really quick CPG update.
Thanks, David. The state CPG is going well, so I am the co-chair for the aging and HIV group. So they have a women's group, a youth group, aging and HIV group, and then they are adding a meth group, which just started yesterday. So they're not quite sure who's gonna chair that at this particular point, but it's good that they're taking on that particular issue. And there's actually a feedback process happening right now for them as well, a monthly. Some of you probably got that email. So keep you updated with the those efforts, but I also just saw too that there was a trans RFA thing going out, so but I'm assuming I'm on the same email list that Shanti staff are as well, so when those things come out, I'm assuming that they're going out to the full council once they come out. Is that fair, Mark? No, should I just forward that stuff on to Kira whenever I see it?
Yeah,
okay,
whenever you see it, please do. We don't forward unless we are asked to forward.
Got it. Cool. Thanks, David.
All right. Ken, your hands up.
Yeah, Thomas, you're head of the HIV and aging. Was that because of your older age?
It was not, Ken. Thank you for that clarity. I am the youngest person in the group. by far, but not the wisest. All right, sorry, I got that back.
Old soul, old clothes.
All right, y'all. So next we have committee and work group reports. So first on the list is Community Engagement Committee. Anybody attend that? Give us a quick yes, summary.
That's me. Thanks. We met and we got an HCAP report from Stephen Cipano. I think the big feedback from that was that we got was that the RCF CI situation is for the most part greatly improved from a lot of the sort of panic reports earlier, and almost everyone has found housing and reasonable accommodation. There was some dental issues that was discussed and concerns that were discussed, and we're hoping that that will be resolved fairly quickly. There was a lot of discussion about the needs assessment and the COLA targets. And so one of the big things was Dave announced that Melinda will be taking over as lead for the stuff around COLA and needs assessment, along with the staff, Perez. There was some discussion around this year's targets. Sorry about this. There was a lot of concerns about what was happening with COVID and its impact on getting the needs assessments done in a timely manner, and they're currently working on that, and we'll be looking deeper in that in the next meeting. There was some suggestions around doing things like virtual focus groups and this sort of thing. And I know that I think they're planning on exploring, they still need to explore more of the contacts that Richard Sullivan had given them earlier. But they don't, you know, I think everyone agreed that we shouldn't feel rushed about completing these targets. So I don't know if anyone wants to fill that out a little bit more, but that was the report back.
Hey, Dave?
Yeah, so, I mean, we're going to be discussing things connected to that when we discuss full council agenda later. So just maybe we can put a pin in some of those concepts, just letting you know that they're kind of what we're going to dig into them a little bit more in you know, a few minutes. That's all.
Yeah, thanks for that, Dave, and thank you, Derek. And then to add to that, so I'll do the council affairs report. So we elected our committee co-chairs, and it's once again Chuck Adams and myself. I'm going really quickly on the agenda we had from last time. And we talked about you know, the work plan and also sort of like the meeting for next week. And you know, there was some consideration about, you know, whether, you know, more information about that and about sort of like being able to table things till later or just, you know, do what we can. And then another part of that committee, basically we had a really big sort of like, I asked everyone who was present to sort of like just, hey, it seems like everyone's kind of stressed out. And so we had a large conversation about the agenda for the full council meeting. And, you know, consensus was, you know, why try to fill the meeting too much if folks are burnt out? And so, you know, we had a moment to share about what's going on. And I think it's really about doing what we can, specifically with all the limitations we have right now. The Omicron sort of like variant has been impacting a lot of services. And has been impacting a lot of folks sort of like working really, really hard. So that was the gist of the meeting. It didn't really inform much of what the COLA sort of report and planning in terms of what that would look like. And so they kicked it to the steering committee. I'm like, it's fine. So that being said, should we talk about that now, Dave, or should we do it after we do all the committee reports?
Why don't we have an agenda item that is the agenda for the full council. And so why don't we just kick it till then and we can sort of link all of these ideas that were sort of through those two committees and discuss them then. That makes sense, Mark? Right.
Absolutely. What I heard about the conversations that occurred, the robust conversations that occurred at community engagement and council affairs did inform the draft agenda that I put together for Monday's meeting. And so, yeah, that'll be another robust discussion, maybe.
Yeah, thank you. No, that's great. All right, next we have membership committee.
So we have, of course, special dispensation for our membership co-chairs. They do not have to be present. And I was not present, so I can't do a report back on what happened. Dave or Kira? Oh, Dave, you were out sick, I think. Was there any council member or Kira? Would you like to just give a quick snapshot of what happened?
Yeah, I can report back on what happened during the membership. Let me pull up the agenda really quick. So we didn't really have a lot on the agenda that day, but we did discuss, I know Elaine discussed maybe stepping down as co-chair, but that was kind of pinned as she was on the fence about it. So we decided to just push that item to next month to see how she reports back, if she does feel like she needs to step down or if she can continue being co-chair. Besides that, we also discussed committee assignments, and I know previously we had discussed kind of taking an open enrollment approach, so if people were fine where they are in their committees, then they would be able to stay, and if they weren't, they would be able to just request like a switch. So that email also out by the end of tomorrow, so everyone should expect an email from me. And then we had a demographic update from Ali, who joined us back this month. And that was about the
whole. Awesome. And then really quickly, so that's it for the committee report. PLWH group did not meet. And then I have here on the agenda,
you have a couple hands raised.
Oh, okay. Yes, Thomas.
First. Sorry, I didn't make you a co-host, so you can't see this. I'll do that now.
No worries. Just within membership, it seemed like people were pretty excited about not having to shift up membership and committee assignments in a significant way. So I thought that conversation was helpful with regards to it. But it sounded like that was a change of protocol from the way we usually do it. Is that fair? Okay. I am kind of curious though, if like balance, if people, when people want to shift, how that's handled, but that's what membership's role is, right? It's to make sure that the equity, there's a balance.
Of yeah. Yeah, exactly. So what usually happens is council staff often comes up with a proposed, committee membership based on how council members themselves have prioritized their interests. So, you know, usually an email goes out saying, please rank your in order of preference. And we try to make sure it's balanced by consumers, service providers in government, as well as, you know, gender, ethnicity, as much as possible. And then we bring it to membership to review that and change as they see fit, and then it's approved. Not everyone gets their first choice because of that whole diversity thing. So this year is a new thing, but we're in a special time. And so I certainly agree with membership's decision. This was suggested at the November meeting to like, let's just not rock the boat right now. People are just, some folks are just barely holding on. So let's just make sure that we make things as easy for people as possible.
Thanks, Mark. And I think the other piece that's kind of missing a little bit is just leadership. So I think that particular committee has kind of struggled with having people who really want to be chairs. So if that helps at all too, that's where Elaine was kind of expressing wanting to step back, but there's nobody to really step forward.
Thank you. So next on, I have Richard and then Ken.
Yeah, speaking of membership, my first two-year appointment expired December 4th, 2021. So am I on borrowed time, or do I stage a coup, or what do I do here? I've been watching The Crown on Netflix. I'm not ready to relinquish the throne.
Thanks for your service.
Richard, we don't consider you a council member anymore. We just consider you a member of public. I thought that's why you were here. I'll have to check that. I'm surprised that you haven't come up for automatic renewal. So, Kira, if you could maybe connect with Allie to make sure that Richard's on the docket, we definitely want him to be legal. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Richard. And then Ken.
Sorry. So, Mark, I understood what you said, that we're going to hold the committees as they are, but that still doesn't deal with the issue about with the number of resignations or leaves of absence and things balancing the committee. So I think that's what I heard the question about. Yes, we start with, you don't need to ask everybody. We just assume everybody's on the committee they want, but given resignations or changes since the first of last year, will that still leave us with balanced committees?
Possibly not. I mean, just to put it out there, to be frank, I mean, possibly not. It's kind of the trade-off that membership determined, really, that do we want to do a shuffling of the deck when we're still going to be virtual for who knows how long? And so, yeah, I mean, that's kind of it's a push me, pull you. Membership can change its mind as well. If you feel strongly about this, I would definitely encourage you to go to membership and state those thoughts. There are some things in stone, but this certainly is not in stone.
Okay. If there are any other questions and feedback, and I'm assuming that the next topic here, the return to in-person meetings, is not happening, right? There's no real update. Oh, what? There is? Que como?
Yeah, I'm here to announce that Omicron is over. No, sorry. Yeah, I mean, I think we should definitely note that we did have a plan to talk about return, maybe even starting the conversation this month. That does seem kind of hasty at this point. But we'd certainly like people's thoughts on that, particularly our government partners, if they feel like they have any insights.
Yeah, it looks like Thomas is
not specifically that, Mark. I think it's still going to be a minute. We're gonna want Omicron in our rearview mirror for a minute before we kind of make that decision.
Yeah, Mark, I could also add that.
Oh, hey, Bill. Go for it.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize. I didn't quite hear you were still speaking. Please go ahead. Finish, please.
The other thing was just the room scheduler. I just wanted to make sure that staff had sent in that request for 6:10 at the times that might need it, just in case we do start to meet back in person. Because I tried to book it for something and it was like fuller than I thought it would be.
Oh, boy. Okay. Wow. Kira, you and I. And Allie, or maybe actually you should have talked to Allie about that, because we might want to start reserving even though we're not meeting right now. Because
just for the end of the year, right?
It's going to be super hard to find another place that will fit us that's going to be free.
cool.
Yeah. Right. So, Kira, please connect with Allie and Melina and or Melina about that. I think those, between the two of them, they were the connecting points. Maybe it was Melina, actually, Dave. Is that true? Was Melina who's doing that, you know?
Yeah, I can remember that far back in time. But yeah, I think that Melina had taken that on from Allie a while ago.
And so they might have to connect with you, Thomas, or you, Kevin, because that person I think has changed who Melina used to work used to connect with. So I guess, Kira, you and I could talk more, but it's definitely something that we should prioritize. Thank you, Thomas, for bringing that up. Woof.
All right, Bill, what were you saying?
Yeah, just that DPH employees that can are now being asked to work remotely. So, and that's probably for another month because of Omicron. You guys could certainly keep it on a monthly agenda and we could check in. Our public health officer now used to serve on the planning council and has kind of awareness of just kind of additional safety stuff for folks that may be immunocompromised. So I think if you guys want to leave it on and we can kind of be prepared, or I can brief Kevin, you know, if you guys kind of want a monthly update of where, what the city is doing, that way you guys can determine when it makes sense to plan for an intern in-person meeting.
Great. Thanks, Bill. Sounds good. If there's any other feedback or questions, I'd like to move on to the next topic. So the next agenda item is the full council meeting. So I think this is your deal, Mark.
Sorry, yeah, my deal, and then it will be Dave's deal. So let me share screen. Hold on just a moment. So glad I didn't shove that piece of salad in my mouth right now, right before. January, there we are. Share screen. January 24th. Okay, y'all see that? And so giving a generous amount of time to our updates, I'm not sure the generous amount of time is needed because this is following, of course, a holiday, but still a full half hour is ideal whenever possible. And one of those rare moments when we actually do, when dreams do come true. So there we have it. Lee, Kevin, Thomas, Chris Kent, Nicole Gracie, and Richard Sullivan. Hopefully he's a member by then. And then I was requested to do a 2021 year in review. This will be an uplifting, positive experience for all. And then we'll have a break. And then there was an idea that really struck me. And so I just put it on the agenda and I'm going to now pass it over to Dave to justify this this agenda item.
this is actually a continuation of both conversations in community engagement, council affairs, and council support staff meeting. It was sort of one continuous sort of through line of thought around how best we can use the time available to us to both sort of be responsive and nimble in our thinking around how to actually accomplish needs assessment goals, check the HRSA requirement around needs assessment, check the box in some ways, which I personally hate the idea of thinking of it as a checkbox, but it has become a thing that we realize is strategically, we're just struggling with how we can get people engaged. The needs assessments are really about collaborative efforts between us and the community and other service providers. And I think we all recognize that those folks are overwhelmed right now. So the original conversation in community engagement was, and I think this might've been Richard's idea initially, was that we should potentially leverage all of our HIV positive members and sort of engage them as though they are the community members that they are, though some of them are service providers, some of them are consumers of services. There's nothing says that they cannot also be participants in the needs assessments. In fact, there have been council members who have participated as needs assessment participants in the past. And so we thought, well, we have a time and a place every month where most of those folks are joining us. Maybe we just utilize the idea that we're all there together with a sort of common goal and a scheduled time, and maybe just do something like a community forum that can essentially be the community engagement that checks that needs assessment box. And maybe send out the survey ahead of time. We wouldn't need to do some of the other aspects of what is usually entailed in community engagement focus groups and or one-on-ones, because they're already accomplished just through our regular tasks, such as prioritization, which is an exercise that we generally have participants do. And so that was an idea coming out of community engagement. We hadn't really settled on topic, and it was unclear whether that was going to be 2022's needs assessment effort and then focus our more creative aspects on the COLAs, or whether that was going to be a sort of our sort of 2021 mulligan situation. I'm not a golfer. I'm not sure what a mulligan is. I think it's a makeup. And so in talking with folks at Council Affairs, there was this idea that, yeah, we have this sort of gap in the agenda. It didn't feel like what we had planned was necessarily a full meeting. That year in review can be as long or short in some ways as it needs to be. I think Mark can be flexible in how he approaches that. And there was, you know, as stated, there was a lot of pushback around the idea of how long we extend that small groups. It felt like busy work to some folks, if I can be frank. And there are people who felt like, why are we engaging in busy work when we're all plenty busy? If this is not actually accomplishing a goal, why do it? Especially if we don't have a clear idea of what we want to talk about and why. And in times past, I think we all would have been happy to have additional opportunity to engage with each other and share ideas. But right now, I think people are sort of feeling a little tapped. So in our staff meeting earlier this week, we discussed this, and Mark suggested that that it seemed like maybe we do approach this as our makeup for 2021, check that box with HRSA, and do this sort of focus group / community forum, utilizing our membership who is HIV positive, and potentially inviting others, members of the public, to attend to also take part, if possible. And so the last chunk of the meeting would essentially be a facilitated conversation. What that topic would be was still up for debate, but it seems to me, given that the efforts that Melina and I put into putting together materials for last year's needs assessment topic, which was HIV positive individuals who were engaging in remote care, telehealth, and other services with a special focus on mental health and substance use, potentially. That feels just as pertinent for this group as any other. And it also feels like it's that concern hasn't gone away. Having, you know, being able to sort of have something that is actually fairly pertinent is a thing that comes up in these conversations, in our meetings, in steering, in full council, every single time. So it feels very, you know, very timely to me, and something that we should engage with. So that is my pitch for trying to utilize a lot of different ideas from a lot of different folks and make sort of a cohesive use of time and effort that also, you know, hopefully does something that we need to do anyways in the eyes of the federal government. So
let me support that pitch as well with an addition. Dave mentioned begrudgingly, and I think we all agree that the idea of just checking a box is an unattractive reason to do something, but we do actually, we are mandated to do this. But I see it as way more than that. This is the first meeting of the year following a, let's just say, a rather, trialsome 2021. And I think creating a space for consumers to actually talk about their experiences, especially after my year in review is appropriate and really makes sense to me sort of on a community level of how we want a first meeting of the year to go. That was the initial plan, you know, to have small groups. It was a looking forward kind of topic for the small groups. It was like, what do you think we should work on in 2022? But, you know, people are still processing their experience of 2021. And so these kind of dovetail into something that is both like an effective way to check that box and to do something that actually creates actual data that's important for us to understand, while also putting council member, particularly consumer experience, front and center in our premier meeting.
So open to feedback here.
Okay, so I had first Thomas Noble and then I had Ken, but I don't know if Thomas is available. All right, Ken.
So it looks like Thomas is available. You want to go first, Thomas?
Yeah, Thomas.
Yeah, no, I think within this conversation, I feel like there's two different things that in my mind are kind of happening. And one is just the acknowledgement of COVID and that we cannot engage with people living with HIV the way that we did previously. So the COLAs and the needs assessments need to be different. And then there is a checking the box process, but then there's also what I would define as a resource of staff time to actually do that work. And so how do we utilize that staff time to do something that is meaningful and that the council can use moving forward? And so part of the conversation within the committee meeting was, could we engage providers who do have access to Zoom and computers and all of those other pieces to get some information that might be valuable for our mission and our charge with regards to making sure that we are making sure resources are allocated properly. So there's one box of like marking the box, and then it's like, okay, that frees us this opportunity of this resource of staff time. How would we like to utilize that? Is that a fair summary, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that sort of two clarifications around that. Yes, I agree with all of those things, and having accomplishing the needs assessment then frees up staff to apply more resources, time, and creativity in how we use the COLAs, which actually have a significantly more flexibility in their mandate. As far as engagement to service providers, my thought also was around, and I sort of didn't include this, was generally when I do needs assessments, I do a service provider follow-up. After I get the sort of results from the needs assessment, I like to sort of share that results with the service providers who are our collaborating partners and ask their feedback. And I often include that feedback in my final report, or if it's not done in time, I include that on the website with the needs assessment materials. So we do have a history of doing that as part of the needs assessment, but it generally is not the focus because, of course, the mandated exercise is to engage with HIV positive consumers of services. And also one of the things we had been discussing in community engagement last year, October, November, and even earlier, was how to approach the concern, our concerns around overdose and substance use in a way that was not stigmatizing. And one of the ideas was to focus that on service providers and get their feedback. So we are sort of working along those tracks already. And I think that that's an idea that we should pursue. Done. Go ahead, Ken.
So I'm not sure I quite understand. Two things that I've heard is that this whole council meeting at the end, we would have this, these group breakouts and utilizing the HIV positive membership. But I also heard how people don't want to waste their time. And I suspect that's going to be, since the HIV positive membership is a much smaller subsection of this whole council. And even some of those people, I'm sure, also don't want to waste their time. I just wonder how we balance these two things. And if people don't want to waste their time, are they going to be attentive to this in the first place? And is this something we just need to put off? I mean, I hate to say it, but it does feel like it's kind of checking boxes in the sense that if you don't have people engaged, what are you really doing?
So
part of that is self-selection. Sorry,
can I? So I think that's too. I think that the people feeling like they didn't have time or capacity for this was largely because, and this is partially my fault, in that those small groups in how they were framed and were sort of portrayed almost in a way that was suggested that they were filler, or it wasn't my intention, but it was definitely taken that way. That this was busy work, and maybe it was dubious as to what it would accomplish. This exercise, on the other hand, to my mind, and I think others, does accomplish a very concrete goal. It accomplishes two goals. One, it does, as we said, check that box. But I think that the conversation around how our membership, especially our HIV positive membership, are engaging in telehealth and remote services in general is very pertinent. And we've heard some people, Ken, yourself, share significantly on this topic over the last 2 years. And I think that suggests that this is a topic that is ripe for further exploration. As far as people not having capacity, I get it. People can check out whenever they want to. We're also gonna be sending out the survey to all HIV positive members that they can do on their own time, before the meeting, after the meeting, whatever. I will also likely prepare a service provider survey so that people feel included, which includes members of government, to fill out as a sort of corollary to the needs assessment conversation. And that way, and that's a thing they can do offline also. Potentially we could have two separate groups, one HIV positive sort of siloed and one service providers having a separate breakout group talking about how they're engaging with that and have somebody else facilitate that. I'm open to either of those. My sense is I kind of rather have that one large thing, but have it really focused on the HIV positive membership. But you guys can determine what the sort of structure looks like. Because, you know, as always, I serve at your pleasure. Does that answer your question, Ken?
Well, without putting people on the spot, I would ask those people who I've traditionally have found are overwhelmed and want to make things go along quickly or don't want to waste time. David, what do you think? Irma, what do you think? Kevin, Bill, what do you think? Thomas, what do you think? Y'all are the ones that, yeah, I mean, the HIV positive people, for the most part, that are not working, don't have the time constraints and aren't in as many meetings and whatnot. But I'm trying to balance this between if y'all think this is worthwhile.
Do you have a master? Is this feasible? Do you have a master list of the council, who the names of people who are HIV positive? Send direct emails to that subgroup asking how they feel about this proposal. Get feedback from that and see the percentage. Up for it.
But remember, a number of those people are on leaves of absence too.
Yeah, I honestly though, and
this would contribute with other people that Dave and Melina have already maybe set up to bring in, that number would grow. If 17 of us did this, and then we threw in the people that Dave had in mind, that's up near 40 people or so for a survey.
There's not 17 of us.
I would really? Say, so from my perspective, and this may sound like a small number, but I will put this in sort of contrast to the numbers we were getting before council staff took over the needs assessment when we were hiring a consultant to do it. Some of you may remember this. We were getting in the low teens, sometimes as few as like 8 to 10 in an actual full year's no pandemic needs assessment participants, which is why council staff took it over in the first place. To my mind, if we get 10, 12 people, whether they're council members or not, and let's also remember some of our HIV positive folks are service providers as well. though less of them. I think it's, and I think it also might be a little late to send out a poll, given that it is Thursday. I have to prep for this for Monday, and I need the go order now so that I can get that prep squared away as soon as possible. I may have already started, but it would be helpful if I had the answer today, as opposed to waiting for people to get back to me on a survey, which sometimes doesn't happen for days.
I want to point out this is a qualitative experience as well. It's not a quantitative one, right? And so what we're getting is actually the experiences, the lived experiences of different folks. And I don't see why this couldn't happen in January. Honestly, if Chuck, Derek, Ken, and Richard were the only four people who were talking about their experiences with telehealth, that would also be valuable. That's valuable information. And what I started saying before is that this is coming after a break. So if there are service providers or consumers or government appointees who are feeling so tired and you know, or broken from the experience of what they've been going through, they can leave. You know, these are not, we're not forcing anyone to go to any meetings. The worst that's going to happen is that is literally nothing. Like, they've already even attended the meeting, so they're not going to even have a ding on their record as far as an absence goes. So I just want us to, in some ways, like, move back from the idea of, like, even questioning whether this is useful or valid, because the experiences of our HIV positive consumers of services on the council are always useful and valid.
You can count me in. I'm not trying to make this about me, but during the pandemic, I moved housing. I attended college. I had medical appointments. I was released from incarceration and probation, all during televisits and things like that. Everything happened for me during the pandemic, living in a one room in the Kinney. It was very relevant. I'll share.
I also kind of want to add in on this. I agree with what I wholeheartedly back what Richard was just saying in regards to this. To be perfectly honest, I had hoped that the discussion would be much more than just around telehealth, but actually help create a narrative of the last couple of years with COVID trying to navigate the HIV system in San Francisco than just the sort of narrow field of what's happening in telehealth. It's been a very difficult year, and I think it would be quite informative to talk about and share those narratives.
I mean, if you are intending on participating in that part of that conversation, I encourage you and anyone to share, because the way these focus groups are done, those of you who have maybe sat in on, I know Richard has actually joined us for one in the past, is we generally start with that topic as targeted and follow it where it goes as needed by, you know, following the lead of the participants. What their concerns are the things that we're tracking. We're not artificially steering it towards one thing or another. So, you know, it is the sort of, you know, what is the sort of group idea around where this goes and where the conversation goes. It's generally pretty organic. The survey is relatively general. There are some specific questions about telehealth, but there's also some very specific questions about sort of general well-being. To your concern, Derek, I think that we'll have ample time or ample opportunity to sort of cover that general kind of like how we are experiencing 2 years of on and off lockdown and quarantine and all of the other terrible, shitty things that have happened in the last 2 years. So I encourage you to share what you want.
Next, I have Bill Bloom.
Yes, hi, Ken. I want to first thank you for raising the issue. And second, just to let you know, I tend to step back about opinionating because you guys do a great job. But given that you've asked us all, I will weigh in with a few words. I think telehealth, at least as a focus, is of interest to a lot of people, including us in HIV health services, for both now and post-COVID, or at a time when COVID doesn't impact the services. Is this really a service modality that we should be adding on, the whether it's in our contracts and everything else? So I'm always interested in hearing it. So I don't think that would be a waste. And I would also make a small sample size, because this is, as Mark has mentioned, qualitative, not a quantitative survey. I also want to suggest that HIV positive service providers, as well as HIV negative, also give another focus, just because they see so many people living with HIV plus the personal experience. So I would encourage that folks, I don't at this point don't know who all the providers are who are positive, encourage additional feedback from them. If we didn't do it, I think HRSA is in so much transition with and so concerned about COVID, we would get a hall pass. But I do think this could be more than just a check the box thing. So, I mean, I'm curious just listening to the conversations here, what people have to say. And I think lots of other people, both the planning council as well as administrative folks, and maybe even HRSA would be interested.
All right. So let me summarize. I think where we're at right now with this conversation, I think the first question is this something cool that we want to do for the next meeting? The second, I think, is also, is this going to be, if we were to do this exercise, would this exercise actually be something that we could follow up on, but also make it equitable for folks who are living with HIV and folks who are not living with HIV in terms of the conversation happening? And then I think Richard made a really good point of, can there be a follow-up for February, but also if there was a survey to go out, would that then also be going out to other folks living with HIV who are part of the council, who are not present for the meeting? So I think that's where we're at. I don't know. So let me refocus to then the question at hand, which is, does this seem like a very impactful and also useful exercise to do on Monday? And if it is, how do we want it to look like? Okay.
Yeah, specifically, large or small, large group altogether, or small groups, or perhaps two groups of provider and consumer. Thank you, David.
I think one of the feelings is, so I'll be honest, I'm feeling really icky that this is something that we're doing without engaging the rest of our consumers. At the same time, if we're having this kind of challenge, if I'm having this kind of challenge, engaging folks too, I don't know how we could do something that isn't critical to someone's survival at this point. It just, something's just, folks don't want to participate in things that are not going to be impactful right now. So I understand that, and I want to make sure that if we do go in this direction, that we recognize that we really want to do this in a much more sort of, really engaging folks and really doing it the way we want to do it. That's more, above ground, transparent, really, a lot more research behind it. If we do go in this direction, then if this exercise is a successful exercise, then, want to make sure that we utilize whatever results we get this and touch base with this repeatedly as we go forward, sort of informing the way we do business in the council.
Yeah, I mean, so as with any needs assessment focus group, the results would be, synthesized and all responses would be aggregated, and I would report back to you. And ideally, I will be looking at those results, not ideally, I will be looking at those results with the community engagement committee to see if we can suss out any sort of recommendations around funding opportunities and or potential changes in service provision, which is always our goal in these needs assessments. So to that end, I do think it is worth doing. And I hear you about how this feels sort of maybe like we're springing a thing on folks and asking them to sort of engage with this sort of surprise focus group that they didn't necessarily plan to attend. We can send out something ahead of time with the survey saying sort of outlining our thinking around this and giving people an opportunity to sort of opt out if they feel. And that's, you know, the honest truth about the needs assessment is it's always opt-in. We'd never operate in a sort of like forced manner. And so this would be no different. So I hope that answers your concerns.
So what do we do next, Mark? Is this something that we...
Is there anyone, I guess I just throw it out there. Is there anyone opposed to this idea? Before we go on how it's structured, is there anyone opposed to this idea of an ad hoc community forum? Nope. Okay. With no opposition, I'm wondering how I'll propose something and then you can shoot it down or change it as you see fit, in that we have to keep the focus on consumers, that we have the large space be for consumers and anyone else who really wants to be a part of that group to respond to the questions. And if providers do want to have their own specific group to talk about sort of what Bill brought up, we can have that as a breakout group as well. I would like the possibility of us not recording or recording sort of be led by the group itself. Because again, sort of pursuant to what David were saying, is that we are springing this on people, but it is also opt out. So they're going to get stuff in advance. And I also want the feeling to be connected to a feeling of confidentiality as well, right? And so that's what I would propose, is like two potential groups, unless people feel strongly that, no, let's just do it all in one big group. I think that's fine too. I just really want to be responsive to what I think Bill said about there might be interesting experiences from the provider end as well that could be collected. What do folks think about the two versus one? Do people prefer a one or do they prefer a two? If there's no preference, leave it up to Dave to decide.
As I was seeing it unfold, I actually did see it as one big group. Okay. So I could see if we wanted... Well, I think part of the issue is those of us that are part of the POS community, as well as service providers, like I would imagine that you wouldn't want folks to fall into the POS group, but you know, some of us may be in the service providers group, and
we can also do a follow-up group that's actually more service provider oriented after this goes back to community engagement, you know, in which consumers would be a part of that large group as well, but it would be service providers who are answering questions.
Right.
So, okay.
So just to be clear, it is also my intention to put together a parallel survey for service providers to fill out at the same time. So they will have an offline component as well that will be anonymous, that will be aggregated, and in a final report. But yeah, maybe we do sort of after hearing what consumers have to say and then looking at the results of that, we have a conversation about service providers digesting that information and how they may utilize that information potentially.
Okay. Or is anyone opposed to it being one large group then to shift the paradigm back? All right,
Can I just make one concern? Just one concern, just one thing. It's just if we do a larger group, I hope facilitation is going to be on point. Because one of the fears that I have is it being dominated by service providers who are not living with HIV. That's my only concern.
Oh, when
we have larger groups. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like girl,
questions will be directed to persons living with HIV, whether they are service providers or not. But this is going to be about the PLWH experience.
Yeah. Right. This is, so as Mark said, this is explicitly about, and this will be made clear during the facilitation that this is about HIV positive membership, and that potentially service providers will have an opportunity to weigh in a more vocal way later down the road, but they're there to sort of witness this if they feel like hanging out for it. But it is it, by its very nature, it has to be that. It's mandated to be that. So.
Okay, good. That was my only concern, to make sure that that.
If there, if this is a concern, I would like to ask the PLWH council members. We could also ask anyone who does not self-identify as a person living with HIV to leave. Is that something, what do folks who feel comfortable?
I think that's unnecessary and almost insultive.
Okay.
Agreed.
I was hoping that people would be comfortable with the larger group, but we always want to put that out there to respect the ability of people to
fill in. I'm only one. Ask the other people, but I think.
Oh, I saw the nodding head. I saw the nodding head, so.
I think this is not the group for that.
Yeah.
Not a shy group.
Yeah. All right. So looks like we're going to be doing this as a large group on Monday. If there's any other input or insight or any questions else you want to ask of the group, Dave or Mark, I think that should be it for this topic.
Also, if people have thoughts post this meeting, email me. I'm happy to discuss it. So.
Thanks, Dave. All right, great. I think that's it. Anything else, Mark?
No. Thank you, Dave, for outlining that whole thing. I'm going to actually add you to the agenda as a person who's facilitating this.
Great. Okay, so I guess we'll see you all next week, Monday, 4 p.m. And then the next steering meeting will be on February 17th. That's it. Thank you so much for lasting this long, y'all. Have a great weekend, okay?
Yep.
Happy belated New Year to you all. Nice seeing your faces.
See everyone.
Mark, Kira, can you hang for just one sec?
Get well, Irma.
Always hanging.
Thanks, guys. See you.
Thank you. So I'm trying to think about what this is. Suddenly a lot of work I have to accomplish before Monday afternoon. Ideally, I have that survey ready to go out tomorrow. I'm trying to think of like ways in which I can pieces of this that I can give off. I think Melina should take some of it also. What are your thoughts on what's needed here? Mark, do you want to write up the sort of language for the reasoning around this and just the sort of concept email? Are you comfortable with that? Or would you prefer I do that?
Concept email.
Just sort of like, you know, we're doing this thing. This is the reason we're doing it is because needs assessment, all of the things we just discussed.
Oh, absolutely. That you would then send out along with your the thing you wanted to send out in advance, the survey, I guess.
Yes. So what's going to have to happen is we're going to have to draft that email. I need to edit the existing or maybe even create a new survey, consumer survey, and then also create a service provider survey. So
yeah, I can do that and have that to you by midday tomorrow.
That would be amazing. I'm probably going to be out early tomorrow. As I said, it's Kiana's birthday, so we're picking her up early and having a whole like birthday dinner, slumber party. And so I have a lot to do before midday tomorrow. I may be working on Saturday on this. So
when will you be having a hard cutoff as far as work tomorrow?
Noon.
Okay, I'll have it to you by noon.
If you can't get it to, I'm going to be working on this on Saturday. I know I am.
Okay. So if I can't, okay.
If you get it to me by Friday afternoon or Saturday morning, sometime or Saturday midday would be amazing. Kira, can I ask you to send everything out on Monday morning? I'll get everything to you before Monday morning, and I'll have the links for both surveys, the language from Mark, and anything else I come up with in the intervening time. Does that sound good?
Yeah, that sounds fine.
Thank you very much.
Do you also want to push or cancel our check-in then this week?
Okay. I do. I'm sorry. No, I'm just okay. Not going to have time. I don't think I'm going to have an hour to spare. to that end, a thing I meant to tell you last week, but I was sick, was you got a raise.
Thank you. Oh, Kira.
Yeah, Mark, you also got you all got a raise. But yeah, you got a cost of living raise, which is in the nonprofit world, a thing to be celebrated because it doesn't happen that often.
Okay. Do you know how much it was? Is that like?
I think it was like $3 an hour more. An hour. It's not a ton.
I can look it up right now. I think I have it somewhere close.
I think he went from 50 to 56 a year.
Okay.
Let me see. Personnel folder.
Which is pretty cool because when I was doing your job, I was making 37. And it was impossible to live on.
Boy. Okay, here it is.
It will appear on your upcoming. Actually,
it was a $2.53 raise as far as your hourly rate. So you're now at $27.53 an hour, up from $25.
Okay. So, wow. And I think it's actually retroactive to the first. So it should have appeared on your most recent check.
It'll appear on the 25th because the 25th is January 1st through the 15th.
Okay.
You're right.
A really quick question. Ken just emailed me. He's asking for like a roster of the people living with HIV. Do we have that? And is that something I can send out?
It is on the server. I don't exactly know where. Melina definitely knows where it's at. And as far as like, it is like semi-controlled information. We've tried to be not handed out, but any person who is on the council, their HIV status is public information. And so it's not wholly confidential. Anyone could actually look that up. So we sort of hold it as like, it's not a thing we toss around freely, but with the understanding that anyone has the ability to know it if they wanted. We've done it in the past. Mark, what do you think?
I think that's fine. It is true that there is tension around there. There's particularly tension on the prevention side because they really protected the serostatus of their former prevention and only council members. However, we consider that as only semi-protected information. Unlike prevention council, they're literally put in one of three categories, right? Government provider, consumer of services for care only, and service providers. So they're appointed officials. And if you're appointed into a role of consumer of services of a Ryan White planning council, then you're saying that you're either HIV positive or you have a family member or you're affected. So he can ask that. It does feel awkward, but he also is a person who has had that information before because he has organized a PLWH advocacy group. So I feel more comfortable with it actually being Ken because Ken's already kind of embedded in the PLWH community. If there was a council member who had told us specifically, please treat my serostatus as confidential, of course we would respect that.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
All right.
Okay.
I'm going to send you the agenda here in just a moment.
Okay, thank you guys for hanging out for a second just to put my mind at ease around my task list for the next few days.
No problem.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Great. Bye.
Have a good weekend, Kira and Dave.
Yep.
Thank you. You too.